Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 141 of Unblocking Crypto. How we keep thinking that one of these days crypto is going to slow down, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down at all.
No, I mean, even when price was flat and low, it wasn't boring. And now price is flat and high, and it's not boring.
There's a ton of stuff to talk about. I guess I'm thinking about starting with the SEC, partly because, one, the SEC has been super active lately. And secondly, it's almost like even with the SEC being active, Bitcoin isn't responding to anything the SEC is doing. They're almost like ignoring it, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, I'll let you lead, but it's the companies themselves aren't really responding to what the SEC is doing either. They're, instead of paying a fine and changing their behavior, they're like, oh, let's just take this down to the courts and see what happens.
Yeah. So speaking of that, let's start with the first one being the Ripple case, right? SEC appeals the Ripple case, and Ripple is filing a cross appeal, which means doesn't agree that XRP is not a security like the courts told him it was. So Brad Garlinghouse, who's the CEO, is actually really pissed. He's like, how can the SEC just spend the taxpayer money on a losing battle without any recourse or consequence? So that's super frustrating. And what's interesting, after all this, the chief enforcement officer of the SEC just stepped down as well. And he's had over 100 enforcement actions against crypto companies in his tenure.
Yeah, it's just the more I listen to things, and I'm starting to listen to more non-Bitcoin centric things, everybody thinks Gary Gensler is doing a bad job. Cuban talked about it in his podcast with the All In guys. Heard it from politicians on both sides of the aisle. It's like, it's the only thing they all agree on right now is that Gary Gensler is not doing a good job.
Yeah, so crypto.com, another huge exchange, got a Wells notice from the SEC. So they turned around and sued the SEC and said, this is ridiculous. You're overstepping your bounds. How about you come out with some regulation instead of just suing people constantly? Because now they've sued every major exchange in the US, and even Bitnomial, which is another exchange, they're pretty much doing the same thing. The SEC is seeking to regulate a proposed XRP futures contract together with the CFTC, which Binomial said, this is ridiculous. This isn't, futures is a commodity, not a security. So this has nothing to do with the SEC. So they're suing them too.
Yeah. And if you think about it, if you're one of these guys like Bitnomial, who I'm not familiar with, but they're likely to be a smaller organization with less funds. Okay, well, let's go ahead. This is our chance now to fight them in court, because everybody's fighting them in court. All their lawyers are tied up. Maybe we get the C team or the D team, and we can win a court battle with our attorneys that, you know, aren't the top-notch, you know, Coinbase attorneys. And the more SEC does this, the more people are going to think like that. And it's like any war, right? You can't win it if you're spread thin and you're not focused on your efforts on any one direction. So the more they pass these Wells notices along, the more I see these organizations fighting them in court. And then the more I see them losing, they're in a bit of a doom loop themselves.
Well, we're not done with the SEC news, by the way. So the SEC has also sued Cumberland is a Chicago-based market maker and liquidity provider for crypto. It kind of makes me think of this whole choke point 2.0 of the SEC trying to go after companies that help the crypto industry. They already went after some of the big crypto banks. They charged them last Thursday of acting as an unregistered dealer of securities, among other securities laws violations. This is somebody that's been around since 2014. The CFTC kind of went after them in 2018 for something similar and lost. And they are being said that they've handled more than $2 billion worth of cryptocurrencies. And they also came out and mentioned five assets that the SEC considers to be securities, which includes Solana, Polygon, Cosmos, Algorand, and Filecoin. And they said that's a non-exhaustive list of such assets. So they're kind of going back to now all cryptos are securities again, and they Gary Gensler has constantly come out and said that everything from the Howey test from 1940 is valid today, which is crazy to me because I'm not sure if there's anything out there today that we use from 1940 that we haven't amended to some of the latest technology. I mean, you're talking about what, over 80 years old.
Yeah, it's not applicable anymore. Or if you want to use it, then you need to bend it a little bit for digital assets because it's clearly in more in the gray area than kind of the older equity securities and that sort of thing. So I don't know why they keep trying to do this other than the government and they're actually doing the work. So passing on these Wells notices is an easy way to look like they were doing something. And then the receiving organization would just bow down, make a change, pay a fine, and move on. And then at the end of the year, the SEC could say, look how many fines we collected. Look at how much good work we're doing. You know, we're obviously doing something. And now it's like, oh, crap, they're fighting us. So maybe this is just how it's going to work. And the industry pushes back hard enough that they actually are like, okay, we need to actually pass regulation and get this done. Or maybe it's something that actually gets Congress going because they can't rely on the regulators to regulate and they'll have to pass a bill. But at some point, you know, this becomes an actual problem. You know, I know for you and I, we listen to this material and content quite a bit, and it seems like it's a big deal. In the grand scheme of things, I still don't think crypto and Bitcoin information has gotten, you know, up to the highest levels in a big way. You know, I'm still kind of waiting for it to crack a presidential debate or a vice presidential debate or anything like that. But, you know, if the regulators are aware of it, I mean, you know, Gary Gensler said he's never heard of Choke Point 2.0 in a congressional hearing. So they're asking him about it. And so it's probably a matter of time before this thing comes to a head. And once politicians realize, oh, nobody likes this guy, then they can start, they feel emboldened to talk about it in public and use it as maybe somewhere, a way to get votes. So maybe it'll raise this problem up to a little bit more of a public issue and it'll make some changes. But I mean, if Bitcoin's doing as well as it is and crypto's doing as well as it is with all of this headwind coming from the SEC, then just wait until they kind of remove this roadblock and provide some clarity on what regulations are going to look like and how it's going to work. And then the industry can actually move forward. So, and more than that, outside money can flow into the companies to, and as private equity or venture capital that knows, hey, I'm not going to just lose my money because the SEC is going to crack down on this startup that I'm supporting. So we'll see how long it takes for that to happen. I think it's inevitable.
Well, before we get into some of the presidential stuff, Charles Schwab did a survey, which was pretty interesting. And they asked a bunch of people, which asset do you plan on buying next year in the ETFs? For millennials, the number one asset was crypto. For all investors combined, the number two asset was crypto. So that's kind of interesting to see that crypto is starting to get some attention. I mean, granted, those are ETFs, and I think that's the wrong thing to be buying. I think you and I both probably agree on that. But if you have no other reason or no other way to buy it, especially if it's in a qualified account, then maybe that makes sense.
Yeah, to me, that's part of the ETF as a layer two. You know, I mean, do I want people buying layer two Bitcoin? No, but if it's the only way to get to it, then it's a net good. I mean, even if it just sucks up the liquid Bitcoin that's available and helps price escalate, because price escalation is like the number one way to adoption. So we kind of have to have it's a chicken and the egg situation. One of them has to go first. And if it happens to be the price runs because a lot of the liquid Bitcoin gets bought by the ETFs, then so be it. Yesterday was a huge day where over $500 million worth of Bitcoin or $500 million flowed into the Bitcoin ETFs. So, you know, you have a few of those days and you start to get taken more seriously. You know, these Bitcoin ETFs are like the number one ETFs ever launched. They still don't get taken that seriously. I mean, we had a federal chairman, Kashkari, who has said some real zingers in the past, but you know, he just said that Bitcoin remains worthless after 12 years. You know, it's like, there's a lot of people that just don't get it, right? And it's like they can't, I guess they can't see the way things are going. Like trajectory matters, right? Like position is less important than trajectory. If this thing's going up, but it hasn't gone up much, then that's important. It's going up. So, you know, time is going to keep marching on no matter what. So why is it not important that, you know, we've gone from zero to a dollar to 10, 100, 1,000, 10,000, and we're closer to 100,000 than we are 10,000. So, you know, we're talking order of magnitude increase in value over the course of 14 years, 15 years. So for this guy to be like, it's not important, it remains worthless. It's like he's literally just not paying attention.
Well, I don't know if you saw the stat from the U.S. debt. So on October 1st, a couple of weeks ago, the U.S. government increased the federal debt by $204 billion in a single day. The Treasury had to draw down its cash balance by about $72 billion. So you're talking about over $275 billion in a single day that is pretty much put on our federal debt, which is crazy. We were talking about $1 trillion every 6 weeks or so. This is going to be like almost a week if they can go on that pace.
Yeah. So October 1st, I think, is the first day of the fiscal year for the government. So it's almost like earnings management where they're like, let's just hold off on spending until the next fiscal year. And then as soon as it hits, they dump $200 billion in a day. And I think the next 2 days weren't great either. So we're talking about close to $500 billion in a week. That's bad news. So, you know, the Bitcoin thesis as an insurance policy against federal debt, it makes that insurance policy a little more valuable when that's out of control, right? I mean, $200 billion in a day means you're out of control.
Yeah. So what was interesting, another presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, came out with more support for crypto. I don't know if you saw this here recently, but she supports crypto for Black men, which is part of her opportunity agenda for Black men. And part of that is providing 1 million loans of $20,000 to Black men that want to start a business. And what was interesting is it had nothing to do with Black women. So there was, I think, a Black woman that was part of a blockchain group that was kind of frustrated that was framed to limiting Black men as consumers, not producers, right? So I'm not really sure what is happening here and why she's supporting crypto just for a small group of the country. But man, it's interesting. And now she's saying it's that $20,000 a million loans, which is what, $20 billion, will end up being forgivable. So just add it to the federal debt.
I mean, if you can buy votes, then buy votes, right? There was a bunch of talk about her making a statement about regulatory clarity for crypto. And I went and like put YouTube videos of her speeches on 2x speed and just tried to chew through some stuff to find it. And I couldn't find a transcript where she talked about regulatory clarity for crypto. I couldn't find her saying it. And so I'm sure she said it. I just couldn't find where she said it. And so, you know, that's, again, the blue team's slow shift away from being anti-crypto. It seems to be, it seems like the market is looking for them to give them some good news, right? Because, I mean, I couldn't find it, but all I could find was people talking about it. And so for me, you know, that's indicative that we're the media is trying to find good little green shoots of growth on the blue side to cut loose a little bit. And so I'll take it, but it's still strange to me that there's not a definitive, clear outlook from Kamala Harris. Like Donald Trump has made it clear what he thinks about Bitcoin and crypto, even if he doesn't have a firm grasp on the whole thing, that he's pro. Right. Kamala has, in the same week that she is talking about this regulatory clarity for crypto, also went on The View and said that there's nothing she would do differently than Joe Biden. So that would include a lot of anti-crypto rhetoric and regulation and roadblocks and choke point 2.0 and all these other things. So, you know, I think she just needs to kind of clean things up and get real clear on what her position is. We're 21 days from the election. I doubt we're going to see crypto move to the front of the line like that. I think that the blue team strategy seems to be like what you said. All right, we're losing ground with this demographic. Let's crank out some information that targets them to get some of those votes back. And the crypto vote is not just one group of people. It's probably mostly young males and probably a lot of white people, which probably is not great for the blue team to support from based on their, you know, at least 12, 16 years. And so for them to kind of choose a group, you know, oh, black males are big into crypto, so we can support crypto that way. Then, okay, that kind of fits how they do things, but it doesn't, it's like backwards logic to help the crypto industry. So I'm done with politics. Like I was done with politics prior to this election campaign stuff. It's just very annoying. And they probably won't do anything when they get elected anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's coming to an end soon, or at least we'll know what's going to happen here shortly. I did see that Trump has taken a pretty big lead on Polymarket. So this is the first time he's been over 53% in a while. Partly is because there's a username Freddy999 amassed about 7.8 million shares for Trump to win. So he is apparently pretty bullish that it's going to happen. There are a lot of people saying that that was Elon Musk trying to sway public opinion, but no one has been able to figure out who Freddy999 is right now. So kind of interesting. We'll see if that really means anything. But once again, if you're putting that much money up, that's a big deal, right? $8 million or $6.5 million pretty much is what he paid, I think, for that.
Yeah, I when the betting market shot up on Trump's side, in my mind was like, okay, somebody just put a big bet, you know, because all Polymarket tries to do is even the money so that they win their 5-10% or whatever, and the money split on both sides. So there's more money shifted to one way than the other, but I'm not sure. I don't know if that relates. It's just as believable as the polls. I mean, like, who knows? I mean, you know, everybody's in their own silos these days, and the algorithm gives them what they want. So it's hard to tell for anybody what, you know, what the future is going to hold. But I think that the idea of winning is a double-edged sword. You have your base that gets motivated and is like, oh man, we got this thing. Well, that may keep some of them at home and they won't be as eager to go vote, or if it rains on voting day and things like that. And then two, the underdog gets rallied, right? So it's like, oh man, we got to get every vote matters. We got to get everybody out there. So I don't know which way this election's going to go. You know, fortunately for us, our elections are untamperable and perfect. So whatever the results are, you know, that's definitely how everyone voted.
I think there's actually a company that was trying to use the blockchain to create a digital way to vote instead of doing whatever we're doing that doesn't seem to be working, but I don't know if it'll ever really work.
Yeah, I listened to them talk. It was like the Guatemalan camp election. They used the blockchain in order to validate the vote. I think we're a long way away from doing anything like that in the United States. We're currently suing in order to require states to not check IDs to vote. And if you use the blockchain, you need to confirm that you have an eligible vote in order to log it onto the blockchain. So we're like 2 degrees of separation away from using the blockchain to have a valid or a confirmed voting strategy. So, so that's, you know, I'm not very optimistic that we get there. But while we're on politics tonight, is the John Deaton versus Elizabeth Warren debate, which would be an interesting one to watch, even though it's in Massachusetts and I don't really care. I want to see her go against somebody that kind of is a smart, intelligent, quick-witted, dynamic thinker that kind of believes in some of the same stuff I do. So I might try to figure out how to watch that on YouTube or something, because I really want to see her put on a hot seat without a script, because she's very good at providing the questions to the person she's going to grill, and then just playing this kabuki theater that makes it look like real life, but it's really it's just an act. So John Deaton's not going to play that game, and I'm curious to see how it goes.
Yeah, that will be very intriguing to watch. So the only other thing that I had from a U.S. perspective was Canary Capital is filing for an XRP spot ETF. I followed kind of Bitwise. What's interesting, though, is they aren't actually buying XRP. The fund will track XRP's value using the CME CF Ripple dollar reference rate, which doesn't really seem like that's a spot ETF in my mind. But, hey, I guess it can get around the SEC need or determination that XRP is a security, I guess. I don't know. Kind of interesting that's starting to happen now, too.
Yeah, those are the things that happen when regulations are unclear. The people just try to get around them in order to accomplish the goals that they have. So it's why regulatory clarity is important. You can at least have everybody running the right programs and the right products for what they're trying to do, instead of having an idea for a product that the market wants and then bending it around the weird quasi-regulations that exist.
Yeah. So moving on to some of the world stuff, I know Bitcoin has done very well here lately in the past few days. And one of the reasons could be China. And China came out on Saturday and they vowed to significantly increase their debt to support its economy, although they provided no details on the size of the stimulus. So that has, I think, a lot of people excited that people are going to be turning on the printing press in other countries other than just the U.S. And even the U.S. had higher inflation numbers too here recently. So that might slow down the rate cuts here coming up now too.
Yeah, I mean, I saw an M2 global M2 chart that looked like it was bending upward, and you know, Bitcoin's pretty well correlated to global M2 money supply, and so if it's one of the good things about when you're invested in Bitcoin is you can kind of pull for the printing of money. Like if you're in hard assets, say Bitcoin, et cetera, like that money finds its way into your assets. It's terrible for people that don't own assets, which is the majority of people, right? I mean, people are going to run out of time to work in order to keep up with the inflation and the debasement of their currency. So they're just toast. And then what does that do? Well, it requires governments to print more money and stimulate so they can hand them more money so that they can eat. Well, and then eventually the food gets more expensive and they, you know, they're in this cycle. And so China doing it, the European countries seem like they're close, if not kind of pushing that way. So, you know, it's amazing how the 4-year Bitcoin cycle coincides with kind of an overall 4-year global M2 printing cycle and quantitative easing. So we'll see what happens. But if China's doing it, then, you know, you've got a lot of countries that look at them and see what they're doing as an indication of what they need to do. So is it great? No, it's not great. People are going to suffer, but this is why you try to get people into Bitcoin, is so at least you're not in complete suffering. You're a part of your net worth is going to benefit.
Yeah. Australia also had some interesting news. They have the Monochrome Asset Management is preparing to launch Australia's first spot Ethereum ETF on the CBOE. What's interesting about this fund, it's positioning itself to be the world's first to offer in-kind Ethereum subscriptions and redemptions, which pretty much would prevent a capital gains tax event for going in and out of this fund, which I was trying to think more about it, of why people would want this. But I guess if you didn't want to deal with a hardware wallet and you trusted an ETF, you could move it over to an ETF and have them hold on to it for a while and then transfer it back at some point in the future to your hardware wallet when you wanted it, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the trust in ETFs is a big piece of it. I mean, you got people viewed as experts, you know, that are good at custodying people's money. And the ETFs have been around for decades. People have gotten to where they like them way more than mutual funds. So they're, you know, it's kind of leveraging that the ETF reputation so that you can bundle, you know, some crypto in there. And people want exposure to crypto, but I mean, not everybody, almost everybody's not willing to do all the stuff that you need to do in order to get into crypto, especially self-custody. And, you know, the further you go down the altcoin ladder, the weirder and harder things get to accumulate and hold on to. So I think that there's a market there. And, you know, even Larry Fink went on, talked about how Bitcoin was its own asset class, kind of compared it to the mortgage-backed securities market that kind of developed. You know, it was kind of the emergence of a new asset class. Twitter took that to say Bitcoin is going to be as big as the housing market, but that's not really what he said. And so, you know, you start having people bind Bitcoin and crypto to the existing, you know, traditional finance world. And I think it just makes it easier for people to consume. You know, it kind of is, people understand ETFs and they don't understand Bitcoin and crypto. So if you say, hey, you could just buy this ETF and you get crypto exposure, now they're like, okay, I can do that. You know, we've talked about it before. Bitcoin is like, it's everything that you don't understand about the internet combined with everything you don't know about money. So you can just skip all of that crap and just buy an ETF. Like, that's what a lot of people are going to do.
So some positive news coming out of Australia, kind of the opposite from Canada. Gemini is now leaving Canada as well. And this comes from a legally binding pre-registration form that happened back in February that every exchange was supposed to file. And a handful of restrictions were among what was required by this. But one of one, which was exchanges were prohibited from allowing Canadian clients to buy or deposit stablecoins without prior approval from the CSA. Right. So there's been a handful of other exchanges that have left Canada as well, Binance being one of them, OKX, DYDX, Paxos, Bybit, which I've just listed like three of the top five exchanges out there. Right. So it's kind of a red flag when you have all these huge exchanges leaving Canada, and it's all because of Canada's rules. So it's maybe Canada is not going to be the crypto friendly. Well, we probably knew it wasn't going to be crypto friendly, but they're definitely want to trend not to be very crypto friendly moving forward either.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird to me that, you know, when I was growing up, the blue team was all about like free speech, innovation, you know, the don't worry, the old rules don't apply. We need new things. And now it's like the bluer the country, the more anti-innovation they are. It's like the more they're in bed with the big banks and things like that. It's like everything's flipped. It's super weird.
Well, even the ECB came out and they just had a report that said stablecoins aren't a safe haven, and it's mainly due to U.S. monetary policy.
it's not the ability for the stablecoin to lose its peg and go to zero.
I looked at Tether, and I was shooting in the last five years or so. It's been between 99 cents and like $1 or $2 or something like that, maybe 98 cents. So it's not like it's really lost its peg. I mean, there are some other ones that definitely have, but it's funny that they're blaming it on U.S. monetary policy and saying because the U.S. is printing so much money that stablecoins aren't safe. Who isn't printing money?
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that like the U.S. dollar is still doing better than everybody else. I mean, if you're Canada, you're talking about the U.S. dollar is the reason for stablecoins to be unsafe. It's still better than the Canadian dollar. So that's a strange one.
Well, this is Europe's central bank, not Canada.
Even worse. Yeah. Sorry, I got mixed up. They're all bad. And the United States is better than them, and it's terrible. So, it's just laughable. Like, these countries and politicians, they're going to run out of runway to keep saying this stuff. Like, they continue to say the same things, and people are catching on. And if they're not careful, more people are going to catch on, and then it's going to be like mass adoption of like, oh, we have a real problem here, instead of people just going to work and complaining that things are more expensive.
You know, what's interesting too, so Dubai, who has been one of the crypto epicenters of the world, right? I mean, they've been huge into crypto. Their VARA, which is the Virtual Assets Regulatory Authority, just issued 7 cease and desist orders to crypto companies because they said they were operating without a crypto license. They didn't name them, but they did issue a warning to everybody saying, if be careful about doing business with unlicensed firms. So it's like, why don't you tell us who they are so we don't know what who we should be doing business with? But it's kind of weird too. I mean, they've been this sandbox for crypto companies and said we're going to be really pro crypto, and then they come out and do this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to think. I mean, Dubai seem to be doing things in a reasonable way, but they're not. It seems like the news dabbles with them. So I need to look into this one a little bit deeper. This one didn't get on my radar.
The other one that was interesting is Palu. It's a small country east of the Philippines. They're going to be testing out putting a savings bond system on the blockchain. And the savings bonds will allow for the construction of bridges, roads, and other public infrastructures across its 300 islands. It's interesting. It's based on the Sora V3 Hub Chain's Hyperledger Aurora 2 base network, which I saw that and I was like, I have not heard any of those ever before. So I looked a little bit into it, and it's kind of a distributed ledger technology, and it's interesting. I still don't know a ton about it, but maybe it will work out for them. So
I don't like that. That has the feeling of somebody went to that country and is just a great salesman and sold them on this. Because if you and I aren't familiar with the blockchain that they're talking about, that's trouble, man.
I think it was started over in Asia and just has kind of stayed over there. But yeah, the little bit that I read, it sounds interesting. It's kind of gasless and all that kind of stuff, so it can be done quickly and easily. But I guess we'll see what happens. I'm glad they're testing it out and not us.
Man, like at a certain point, just we're going to try Bitcoin like a couple of other countries have gotten into. Like, there was a country in the Caribbean that used Bitcoin Cash and they didn't actually use it. Like, anybody that tries things that are not Bitcoin, I would be nervous. Like it's a big enough risk to use Bitcoin. If you go down the chain or down the altcoin list, the risk goes up quick. That's shocking.
Yeah, it's almost like this isn't really truly an altcoin. It's more of just a infrastructure to use. So they would put their own stuff on it. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Like, I mean, I'm kind of a fan that they're testing things out and they're doing it in a small country, and we'll see what happens with it. And could this be copied on another network? Absolutely. Could people use this? Sure. Right. But we'll see what really happens with it.
Yeah.
Thailand was also in the news. Their SEC proposed some new rules to allow mutual funds and private funds to invest in digital assets, which, I mean, that's great to hear. I'm surprised it's taken this long, but at least they're going down the right path.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that the U.S. ETFs, I think, paved the way for other countries to approve similar things. And so that's why it's important for those countries. I don't know that it's all that important for Bitcoin's price in general. Like, you know, the U.S. is the monster. And if everyone else has the ability to get into Bitcoin through their like equities channels, you know, that might be another 30% bump compared to the US. So that's fine.
I also saw that Bitcoin had a 39% surge in active Bitcoin addresses in the last week, which that's usually a really good thing for the Bitcoin price, and it precedes a decent price increase. So we'll see if that happens here shortly. Although I feel like it kind of did happen. It's been up, what, 10% in a week?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Bitcoin moves quick and it's like boring for a long time and then it ramps up dramatically. I mean, I think so far this year there's been 10 weeks that matter and the rest don't. So maybe we'll have an 11th or 12th before the end of the year.
I know last week we talked about the Bitcoin documentary that was coming out named Peter Todd as Satoshi, which most people in the crypto community pretty much just rolled their eyes and said, seriously, that's the best you could do. And saying that was, I mean, the worst part about it is now Peter's going to have people try to extort him because they think he's Satoshi, and there's almost zero chance that he's Satoshi.
Yeah, I think the best take on this, Jack Mallor said it. He's like, look, so this guy gave us Bitcoin, right? He came up with it. He put the work in, put it all, launched it into the world. And the only thing he wants is to be left alone. Like, yeah. Why can't we do that? And so I think that's probably the right take or something close to it. Otherwise, you're just going to ruin other people's lives like this. I mean, now you have to have private security and crap like that. And it's just a shame.
So Uniswap had some interesting news. They're planning to launch an L2 on Ethereum. They're going to call it Unichain. The goal is to cut fees, boost liquidity, all that good stuff. What's intriguing is it's going to be built on the Optimism tech stack, same thing that Base is building their stuff on, which could be good for people that hold the Uni token, because Uniswap has paid, I think, about $368 million to Ethereum validators. So moving some of that to their own L2 could just mean more of these fees come back to the Uni ecosystem, hopefully.
I'm going to jump in that one.
What was also interesting that I saw is in Q3, can you guess which blockchain had the most revenue?
The most revenue via like fees and transaction costs and things like that?
Yep.
My guess would be Ethereum.
You would be close. It was actually Tron, which had 2x the amount of Ethereum, 5x the amount of Solana, and about 10x the amount of Bitcoin. And a lot of that has been stablecoins. They now have about 35% of the stablecoin market. And then meme coins, their meme coin activity went crazy here recently. And then emerging markets are starting to use it a lot because of the low cost. And that's been Nigeria and Argentina are two big users of it. So kind of interesting, kind of scary.
It has hit my radar that the ton of stablecoin transactions are done on Tron because it's so cheap. So you've got these, you know, third developing countries that don't want to spend the money to do the transactions, and they're happy to just hope it works and just pay per transaction. Or maybe they're just not. Maybe the risk doesn't matter to them. Like their entire life is risky, you know. Like they're just used to the bottom dropping out of things, and so they live with that. But it's pretty surprising that at a low fee, they're doing enough transactions to overcome the, you know, the higher cost per transaction of those other chains.
Yeah. There's also some FTX news. Caroline Ellison, she is, I guess, going through a settlement that requires her to give up all her assets to the FTX creditors. And then I think the other guy, Ryan, is facing about a 7.5-year jail sentence coming up here pretty soon, too.
Yeah, they should go to jail. I'm surprised that they would have any assets left at this point. It seems like after the several years, that stuff would have been frozen and seized. But I don't really know how all that stuff works. So maybe it's frozen, and then after the convictions are through, maybe then it's seized, and that's what this is.
Well, I don't think they've done any legal issues with those people. They were helping put SBF away, and now they're saying either you can go to trial and use up all your assets, or you can just give us your assets, take this settlement, and we'll call it even.
Gotcha.
So we haven't really talked a little bit. Well, we talked last week about Tigran and he was up for bail for medical reasons. His bail was denied despite him meeting all the requirements to be granted on medical grounds. So it's still, I think, a little frustrating. It's the U.S. government is, I want to say, almost not paying attention to this right now, just because maybe the election season or just because it's one person. But this has been just a utter fail between relations with the U.S. and Nigeria, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if he was a WNBA basketball player, I think this would be resolved by now.
That's what it takes, apparently. Stripe is actually back with some positive news. They had a little hiatus from crypto for about 6 years, but they have just introduced a new payment option that allows businesses to accept USDC from customers in more than 150 countries. So exciting to see them back in the crypto space. Can't believe it took so long.
Yeah, if I were in the crypto world, or even in like this in the monetary transaction world, now would be the time I would start to ramp things up if I hadn't, because if Bitcoin doesn't go on a run here, then it will be a surprise. So you're about to get a lot of news. It's about to be in, you know, in the news cycle. It's going to be in front of everybody. Well, we just did this 4 years ago, and then we did it 4 years before that. So you don't want to be the company that doesn't have a response when shareholders or investors ask, what are we doing to leverage crypto? And so good for Stripe for actually kind of executing instead of waiting.
And so the other thing that's happening today, which is today is October 15th, World Liberty Financial is starting their sale for their public token. So they're trying to raise $300 million on a $1.5 billion valuation. You'd end up buying WLFI, which is a governance token for World Liberty. I'm still skeptical that people are going to buy it, yet they have over 100,000 people on their white list. So we'll see what actually happens with this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like it, but these things happen.
Yep. And then the last thing that I had on my end was kind of an interesting story. There's a British man that mined about 8,000 Bitcoin, threw his hard drive away way back when, and is trying to get the city to go let him do an excavation of the landfill that holds this 8,000, that holds this hard drive. It's going to cost him $13 million to do the excavation over between 18 and 36 months. And then they'd have another year after that of remediation work. And he promised to give the city 10% of the amount of Bitcoin on there once he finds that. But the city is saying they're worried about environmental concerns. So he's suing them for like $637 billion. Million dollars. And, saying that's what the peak rate of it was. So that's what they need to pay him if they don't let him go do this. So kind of a crazy story, but it'll be interesting to see what actually happens over the next couple of months with this.
Man, I talk about a needle in a haystack kind of situation. Holy cow. That would be a tough one. And then if you find it, it could just be damaged beyond recognition. I mean, it's not going to be a solid state modern hard drive, and it's going to be under thousands or whatever tons of material, and it's gotten compacted. I mean, that's a long shot.
Yeah, I don't know how you take apart the landfill without screwing it up somehow. Right. So that's interesting. I'd love to know the engineering behind that, what they're trying to accomplish to be able to do that. But yeah, I agree. It's definitely a needle in the haystack type of opportunity.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see what the judicial side of it says too, because like once you throw something away, I don't think it's the city's responsibility for any losses that you incur. Like those damages aren't because of the city. That's because you threw away your hard drive.
Yeah. So busy week. I'm sure a lot more is about to happen. We'll hear more about how World Liberty Financial does today, next week.
Yeah, I can't wait for that one. I'm really on the edge of my seat about World Liberty Financial.
First it's World Coin, now it's World Liberty. Awesome. Can't get rid of these World Coins, World something coins. Perfect. Well, Hal, as always, great catching up. We'll talk again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Jason.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.